Bill Cundiff.
And Sue's still pointing at us. Oh, here we go.
There you go.
Now it sounds like we're talking. Before, it just sounded like we were talking to ourselves, because we were. Okay, so, redo. Good afternoon. Welcome to We the People Radio. We're having another episode, as they say. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, again.
Although I heard you the first time.
Yeah, but I heard myself.
But I was alone.
Well. Yeah.
It's the only one.
Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard up in Shasta Lake City. Just you can see them there from the freeway. Lots of John Deere products in stock, from mowers to compact tractors. They're also a Honda dealer. They've got Honda products, generators, mowers. They've got it all in stock. Go up and see them. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Or you can find them on our homepage at wethepeopleradio.us.
.us, that's
right. Because I finally got that all situated.
We got that link up, so yeah, you can go there and just hook up and see.
All ready to roll.
They got it all. So there we are.
All right. So today we're, I'm kind of loud.
Well, I've grown used to it.
It's, you know, it's a family problem.
Yeah.
Bill was spared the giant family loudness this year, however. So,
you know, that's the Thanksgiving dinner where everybody talks at the same time.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're not together that often.
And you could actually sit there and talk to yourself and nobody would even
notice. we would butt in.
Nobody, no. You would butt in on yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we hope you all had a really nice Thanksgiving. We're airing this show the first time on December 1st of 2019, because sometimes we replay them, so I'll give you a little context. We were actually joshing about Thanksgiving, so we hope you had a great time with your family. We are going to move from Thanksgiving, all the happiness and togetherness there is. We are going to move right into the inside issues about Hong Kong and what's going on with China. We hear a lot about it in the news, but we only hear about it for like a minute and a half at a time. We don't seem to learn a lot.
Nope, you'll hear the full story today.
Yeah, so today we thought we would have our guest, Dr. Chen, back on with his friend, Eureka Young. And so let's see, we have had Dr. Chen on several times before. You can find his information on our website at wethepeopleradio.us. Got all of it there. He's been active in projects concerning China for over 30 years. He's founded, co-founded, or been a spokesperson for a number of organizations concerning China and has spoken extensively on issues related to China. We have a ton more information. I'm going to skip to the end, though, of his bio, because I hope you'll go back and listen to some of the programs he did where he told us some background about himself. He was born in China in 1962, so he's a year younger than I am. Isn't it great? Isn't it great to be 57, 58?
I wouldn't know.
Although lately it feels more like, you know, we're all senior citizens because the world's gone mad. But at 15, he entered the gifted program at China University of Science and Technology. He came to the U.S. in 1982 to study and received his Ph.D. in molecular biology at the University of California, San Diego. He currently owns and runs a molecular biology startup in San Diego. And his friend, Eureka Young, came from China to the United States as a college student in 1988. After graduate school, he worked first as an engineer and later as an independent consultant providing real-time financial information, retrieval and processing solutions to financial service firms and government agencies. His clients include Dow Jones and Company, Adobe, Oracle, Banco de Mexico, and Booz Allen Hamilton. Sorry, I got those out of order there. Mr. Young's professional work requires him to stay on top of global, macroeconomic, and geopolitical trends. Starting from 2012, he's been providing analysis and information free of charge to not-for-profit organizations, particularly those with interest in U.S.-China relations. So, gotta say, we've got some experts. And we'll kind of let them take it away. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Good afternoon. Thanks for coming on.
Good afternoon.
You'll have to
have a very good Thanksgiving.
Absolutely. You'll have to introduce yourselves so people know which voice goes with which person, since we're all talking on the phone here, so we can't see you.
Yeah, this is Shizhong Chen. I've been on this program a number of times. So I'll let my friend Eureka speak.
This is Eureka Yan, and it's first time I'm on your radio program, and I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're glad
thanks
to have
a lot.
You. Absolutely.
We can actually hear you better than Dr. Chen. Maybe Dr. Chen, you could get a little bit closer to your microphone a teeny bit.
Yeah. Is it better now?
Oh, hey, there you go.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. It's just sometimes when we have two people, you know, one is loud, one is soft, and so you know how that goes. Okay, so now we've bridged the technological gap there.
The fine-tuning.
We've jumped the shark, as they say. So, where would you guys like to start?
Well, let me first say this. I've been onto this program, partly because the information we covered was vast, so... the previous stories wasn't quite as complete as I wished to deliver them. But today, hopefully, we will deliver a complete but complex story, see if we can accomplish this, because there are several events happened, you know, in the past couple months, and that they really tie into a very intriguing story that involves Hong Kong and Taiwan and the CCP's overall strategy, its war against the whole world, and then how the free world, particularly the United States, would be best in helping helping Chinese people, at the same time helping itself to end this horrendous war. And so hopefully we will deliver this story in a tight little package. And so I think as you know, our program called for, we should start out with discussing the Hong Kong story. Eureka will have much more detail because he's on top of these things. But the Hong Kong story only come to be known to the public beyond June. In fact, probably after August, when it has escalated to a very large scale. But it really started with a Hong Kong-Taiwan situation. And it has become what it is now, with a lot of, you know, we can only guess, with a lot of manipulation, with CCP's aiming at Taiwan. And that's why you hear a number of congressmen or Senate in their recent debate and discussion on the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act to say that Hong Kong, if we don't do Hong Kong, if we don't win Hong Kong, Taiwan will be the next victim. So they know something that but the general public do not know yet, okay, because this has not been well covered. But basically, let me be briefly, that this Hong Kong movement started out as a movement against anti-tradition law, specifically to prevent the CCP willfully taking any Hong Kong citizen to mainland China, right? And the cause of this was there was a Hong Kong murderer who killed his girlfriend in Taiwan and then escaped or ran to Hong Kong. He's a Hong Kong resident. And there's no extradition, you know, treaty between or arrangement between Hong Kong and Taiwan. When Taiwan requested Hong Kong for assistance to solve this homicide case.
Hold that thought, Dr. Chen. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back with you.
Sure.
You're listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
What do they want? What should we do about them? What do they want? What should we do about them? What do they want?
I see spin across the ocean. Too much money.
And we're back. Okay, sorry for that unceremonious pause there. You can restart right where you are.
Sure. We're talking about this murderer from Hong Kong killed his girlfriend, who was also from Hong Kong, to travel to Taiwan. And after the murder, escaped back to Hong Kong. And Taiwan tried three times to request for assistance. The Hong Kong side didn't respond. And now, this we can only do analysis, right? But somehow, somewhere, the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, must have found its value. And then it started to push this anti-tradition law. That would include, that the law would cover Hong Kong as well as Taiwan. So right away, this become a political issue that has implication in Taiwan. That's the larger picture, right? And this picture has largely been missed, right? Now, does the CCP need this anti-traditional law? Well, in reality, in practice, it really didn't. That's why I say, you know, this, the Taiwan implication could be very important. Because before this extradition law controversy or confrontation or war right now, the CCP has been going to Hong Kong to arrest Hong Kong residents before. It has happened, right? And so this law would only make that more convenient. That's it. I mean, they don't need it. They have been doing it. Right? And so later on, we'll bring in another story, and that's why this could be a complete. This will make it complete. It's a recent defection of Chinese agent to Australia. He personally involved in one of the many, kidnapping of Hong Kong residents to mainland China. So the CCP didn't really need it. And yet, with this murder case happening in Taiwan, it started to push for that. And Hong Kong resident, of course, was already sensitive to the things that the CCP was in Hong Kong. This has a range of background, starting in 2013, and then 2017, and then now 2019. Each case there were particular law, a particular legal issue. And now, finally, in June, it broke out into the current anti-tradition movement, anti-traditional law movement. And I will ask Eureka to fill in some of the key events that has led to a lot of tragedies that leads where things are now. Eureka, you want to take over?
Yeah. for the extradition bill proposed, which proposed by the special administration in Hong Kong, the government of Hong Kong, it was like being discussed early this year, like March or so, and people in Hong Kong, they very much understand that China, mainland China, has a weak rule of law, and this lack of the rule of law is one of the main causes of trade friction between the United States and China. And while Hong Kong itself is rated very high in terms of economic freedom, and so despite the economic growth in the past few decades within China, businesses like U.S. business in China, they experienced the first hand violations of economic freedom within China. And not only that, U.S. businessmen and the business people from Europe and from Hong Kong as well, or Taiwan, they understand that violations of economic freedom in mainland China spill over into violations of political freedom, into the space of human rights and freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. So they consider this extradition bill a huge threat. They could be arrested and framed arbitrarily. And one recent event was a staff member of UK's Consulate General was tortured and harassed when he was visiting across the border and visited China. Given his status working in UK's Consulate General in Hong Kong, he was treated with this kind of diplomatic status. Even a person with that identity would be severely abused. Then people in Hong Kong, it wouldn't surprise people in Hong Kong that if an average citizen in Hong Kong gets taken over into mainland, then what treatment they can expect. So that was how the demonstrations started this year.
Now, not to get off the point too quickly, what is their status as far as freedom of speech in Hong Kong? I mean, do they really have open freedom of speech there, or are they pretty locked down by the CCP?
Yeah, and the situations, I believe, have been deteriorating. And the defector who recently was interviewed by media in Australia that we're going to get to, he claimed that he was involved in kidnapping of publishers, which relates to freedom of speech,
mm-hmm.
In Hong Kong. He was involved in the kidnap of the book publisher into mainland China. And then there's also subjects that you cannot discuss among Chinese media, especially not only in Hong Kong, but worldwide media just don't touch upon those topics. Examples would include events in Xinjiang, Xinjiang, and I'm glad to see that New York Times started publishing over 20 documents, over 400 pages documents leaked out from there. So there, and then there's also organizing Dr. Chen was involved, the Conscience Foundation, that he has been advocating a spiritual group, Falun Gong, followers in China who have experienced also severe abuse. So in Hong Kong, topics like these are not widely publicized or discussed. But on the other hand, There are media. I believe there are a few media out in the Congo. They are rather outspoken, and in the past few months, they are on the streets recording the demonstration firsthand. So there is this tug of war in Hong Kong. Right? Yeah, there's no like a single statement that I or a single word that I could describe. How the situation is. It's fairly complex, but it is getting worse.
So can I chime in? Just remember we will come back to the Hong Kong
topic. Please do, because I've only got like 2 minutes, and I know you better, so I feel better about cutting you off.
Okay, no problem. Bill asked an excellent question. It actually, to answer the question, we have an answer in terms of principle, but also an answer in terms of practicality or reality. If we turn this question on United States, on America, we cannot ask us, do Americans have freedom of speech? In principle, we do.
Depends on where you are. I guess if you're at Berkeley, no.
Well, in principle, we still do, right?
Right.
In there, even there. But in reality, do we have them? Well, it's a practical matter, right? When all the news media, or most of them, were controlled by certain group with their own agenda, and as I have always spoken on this, loudly spoken, that news media is not a business, right? Cannot be treated as just business. It carries public interest. And when our channel, it's not our right, but our channel of freedom of speech is blocked or controlled, then in practice, our right could be there, but you cannot practice it. You don't have it in reality. And that is happening in Hong Kong, but also happening in the United States. If American knows how many media was bought and controlled by the CCP, we will know how and why our freedom of speech is also under attack in big ways.
Right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, can you talk a little bit about how things have changed as far as freedom of speech since the CCP took over Hong Kong, which I think was, 1999? What's the difference between now and then? And we'll be right back.
Look at you, Bill.
If everybody's wrong, young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
And we're back. And we're talking about freedom of speech in Hong Kong, and I'm just curious how much it's changed since China took over Hong Kong, and what's the difference between then and now? And I know it's getting worse, but is that something that's just recently been changing, or have they slowly been chipping away at it?
They have been slowly chipping it away, and in recent years, the situation got worse, much worse in like the past 5 or so years. Prior to the handover of Hong Kong to mainland China in 1997, Hong Kong boasted as one of the with highest degree of press freedom around the world. And after the handover, due to economic, as China's economy grows, and it started to influence Hong Kong media in multiple ways. And for example, they financed television stations, a prominent prominent one named Phoenix. Is known as, I think it's Phoenix TV. And also, not only that, and they can also influence television stations and the print media by, like, allowing, like, by blocking or directing advertisements to these media. And also during, also they, Beijing, I believe, is very capable at influencing editorial board and the selection of chief editors. One example is with the South China Morning Post. This is a like a very well-known media. It has a long history, and it is like a well-established English media in Hong Kong. And there, around 1997, I think, people working at the China Desk in South China Morning Post, they write the reports, and those more outspoken reporters, they they're like their reports came under kind of a sort of a censorship, and their editor in chief was like even their editor in chief I think was under pressure of Beijing, and they will decide whether like a report could be published in full or they want to like cut out sensitive sections of the report.
Mm-hmm.
So that was during the transfer, like in around 1997, and there was one reporter. His name Paul Mooney, and I think he was due to his unbiased report, he wasn't able to renew his contract with the paper, and this took place around 2012. And after 2012, not Hong Kong's situation got worse because it is close to China, and in China, the freedom of speech is really like under threat. Although it is an authoritarian government, there was still some leeway that people could discuss issues so as to like advance economic growth, so as to like promote social justice, so that to alleviate the disparity between different social groups, which would actually would help the governance of the country. But even these discussions are coming under very close scrutiny.
Now that they have the ability to monitor people so closely with all of the cameras and those sorts of things,
all the
facial recognition and all that, I would imagine that has enabled them to crack down in a way that they never could have before.
Yes, and these surveillance cameras and also reporters from mainland China and the people with connections with these police and other like law enforcement groups in China, they came into Hong Kong to take pictures, and that's why protesters, they wear masks, right? And then
sure.
The administration region in Hong Kong, they passed a law that they just directed like the legislature to pass a law to prohibit protesters from wearing masks, not just the protesters, just everyday people when you're on the street. Yeah, they wouldn't allow them to wear masks. Yes.
And is that new?
Let me just mention one trick that honest people probably didn't even think of how to curtail control your freedom of expression. That is to threaten those commerce to do advertisement in media that the CCP didn't like. that would effectively cut off their
funding,
economic means.
Sure.
And this is exactly what happened in the United States to Epoch Times. It's still going on now. The CCP would threaten those shops who, those business that did do advertisement with Epoch Times. They'll go to them and then see, if you do this, something would happen to you. And, well,
they firebombed their offices, four times?
Mm-hmm. And actually, as part of this Hong Kong confrontation last week, there's some unknown people, we can guess who they are, but they break into, actually, more than break, they just basically forced their way into Epoch Times printing shop in Hong Kong and burned it.
I think that's the video I just saw just a few days ago. Was it this the one they caught on surveillance? And I guess we should make a note for the people who are looking for real news and full stories rather than, the sanitized stories or actually things that don't cover anything sensible at all. The Epoch Times, Epoch Times, it's like $39 a month. They send out a hard copy paper once a week. They send out digital all the time. Actually, you're always available on digital, but it's really worth a subscription, and I believe the first month is like a dollar. And it would be worth checking out if you find that, some people still like the newspaper, so they still get their local paper, even though there's not a lot going on in there.
A lot of the older people don't do internet. And what are they doing on internet? Are they pretty successful at cracking that that code and blocking a lot of sites on the internet in Hong Kong?
Erica?
Maybe you should pick this over, see if you could.
I was asking if the internet is censored and if certain sites aren't available in Hong Kong as far as the internet service.
For the internet censorship, I think it is the situation is not as bad as in mainland China. But in the recent weeks, in the past few weeks, the developments in Hong Kong, the police forces were besieging Hong Kong Chinese University. And one of the reasons, according to news reports, was that there was a hub, like an internet hub, where the messages were exchanged and they were dispatched. It is one of the hub where information flows into and out of Hong Kong. And the police aimed at cutting off that main channel of information flow. And so now information flow in Hong Kong and the internet access is under severe pressure. I do not have the latest status on whether people are still experiencing any difficulty in getting message out. But so far, it seems the protesters, they're still in touch with each other.
Right. I was also curious if that use of the internet, because they can track who's who and your IP address and so forth. And I would imagine that is a bit of a challenge for them as far as being identified on the internet. Are they using the dark web, or are they just openly using the internet to communicate?
Well, the CCP, that's why the CCP is the single biggest incentive or promoter for the VPN services. That service has helped people to hide their identity. So of course the CCP is trying to crack down on that. There are already laws in China prohibiting the VPN, but I'm pretty certain that the United States is researching on how to completely break the CCP's control of internet, the Great Firewall.
Sure.
And of course, if this internet connection can come from the sky, that would be a great deal.
Yeah, no kidding.
And they've got, you know, the CCP now has Google helping them out there too, which is real nice.
Yeah, really lovely.
So.
I've got to take a really quick break here. We'll be right back with our guests, Dr. Chen and Eureka Young. Wasn't going to let the Beatles overtake us for a second time. Sorry about the fumble on the play.
Yeah, fumble on the play.
These things happen. All right, so we've got 10-ish minutes until the top of the hour, and thank you for being our hostages the second hour, because obviously this topic is far from over.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes, have a field day.
Yeah, so... I was optimistic that we can tell the whole story now. We're under the threat of time, so I want to move things, accelerate things a little bit to bring the Hong Kong to summarize the Hong Kong situation a little bit. Till right before the passage of the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act in U.S. House and Senate. So from June to November, there was this, Eureka put it nicely, as a controlled raid massacre. Well, I shouldn't say nicely, but succinctly, the situation has escalated in Hong Kong, and yet in news media, well, the CCP make it as a the rioters are the ones that caused the problem, and fortunately, many media in the international society still cover it more or less accurately, but not comprehensively. And what is going on, there's a controlled raid massacre. What I define it as a kill as needed. To kill to serve its purpose, but only kill as it served the CCP's purpose in the best way. And their attack of a siege of university changed that, alert the international community quite a lot. So that process, I would like to have Erica to fill in some of the key themes or details. Erica wants to speak about it?
You're right. I didn't get the exact word, the content to fill in the area that you'd like me to fill in.
What you call the controlled rate massacre. Controlled massacre or controlled rate massacre. You have put it that way.
I have to gauge the governance, effective governance of an area, by looking over Communist Party's long history over 20th century and now into 21st century. They usually take like this approach. The first they will through propaganda, right? And education, they will let young people to grow to become what the term is patriotism, patriotic education. But then nowadays it's mainly nationalistic education. And the first is education and propaganda. The next step, if people do not buy into that, then the next stage, it goes to economic incentive, right, to pay for service, in exchange for your paying tribute to the current leadership or the current set of policies. They give intellectuals prominent status and also good economic status and social status. So that's for free education, education which doesn't cost as much becomes ineffective, then it rolls out economic incentives. Then if this does not work and people do not want go beyond the limits and they do not want to sometimes they do not want to be associated with people they even among intellectuals they think those they do not like to really say things to really praise the leaders that they do not like, right? Then because there was this phase of a cultural revolution where intellectuals were undergoing severe tribulations, and they did not want to say good words about practices deployed during cultural revolution, so they refused to pay tribute to leaders who are advancing that. A former party boss in Chongqing, Bo Xilai, who was toppled in 2012, he was known to promote this type of policy. So then, by the time people are not willing, even if you are trying to pay for their service, then the policy would be rolled out they're going to threat you, right? They're going to implicate your non-compliance would impact your family members' promotion, so that's the third stage. And if that does not work, then there would be economic depravity, and there would be imprisonment, and then there would be harassment. This would be the next phase. And in Hong Kong, in the past few months, there are reports saying there was this young girl who was good at swimming, and she was the last video surveillance camera caught her being taken off campus. Then a few days later, she was washed ashore and died. She was very good. She was a swimmer, but then she was
accidental death again.
Yeah. And then there were also reports people falling off from high rise. But when their body hit the ground, there was no pool of blood. So basically, they were dead before they were pushed off the building. And now we're in this phase that like education wouldn't work, and the economic incentive wouldn't work, and the threat wouldn't work. Now, like, we're start seeing these called like suicidal death cases. So this is really disturbing, and this is something that we really need to speak out. And it's because the task force now appears to be running the show, and so it is very hard to thoroughly investigate these cases. And it is one of the five demands of Hong Kong protesters, that is, they want to form an independent committee to look into overuse of force and to look into police.
I'm sure that's a pretty much a bottom of their list of things to do.
Yeah. So that's how the reason that are very disturbing.
Do you think the protesters in Hong Kong have a little more leeway than if, say, you wanted to do the same kind of protesting in mainland China?
Of course, because of the international attention. And what do we say in this radio? Although, like, we thought people in Hong Kong probably wouldn't have heard it. But because of the attention of international community, and also the support of the public in the United States, reflected in the overwhelming the votes for the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act. That's why I believe the 1 million or so law enforcement troops haven't got into Hong Kong. Yeah, I think whatever we were discussing, whatever we say, I think our support really matters.
Sure. I think a lot of people here are pretty surprised that the military hasn't jumped in up to this point.
Well, it also seems to be malfunctioning. I mean, the more that they oppress them, the more attention they receive. It appears from here that the protests are getting larger. Let's pick that up on the other side of the hour when we come back. And we really appreciate you guys coming on with us. I really hope people will go on to the website, check out both your bios, look at the Epoch Times. We have a link to them, and consider subscribing. It would be really worthwhile. You'll learn a great deal. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.